Imagine a machine, right? Just scanning millions and millions of lines of code. It doesn't get tired, it doesn't lose focus.
Right.
And then suddenly it stops. It completely isolates this foundational piece of internet infrastructure and, just casually points out a catastrophic security flaw that thousands of human experts missed for 27 years.
Yeah, that is just staggering to think about.
Right. And that didn't happen in some sci-fi movie. It happened literally this morning at Anthropic. And it actually terrified their internal evaluation team so much, they just locked the model in a digital vault.
They absolutely did.
Anyway, today is Wednesday, April 8, 2026, and welcome to this deep dive. We are looking at a really curated stack of sources from Tech and AI Daily today. And our mission basically is to extract the critical insights from this rapidly shifting boundary, the line between extreme technological capability and, well, human control.
Because, I mean, we are really witnessing a massive divergence in the industry right now. On one hand, you have these proprietary models achieving such profound capabilities that their creators are treating them like hazardous materials. And then on the other hand, you have massive, just unprecedentedly powerful models being open sourced and completely handed to the public.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting right at that bleeding edge. We are seeing two radically different philosophies on releasing frontier models, and it's happening on the exact same day. So let's look at Anthropic first. They developed this new cybersecurity-focused model called Claude Mythos. And according to their newly released system card PDF, this model pushed their ASL thresholds for offensive cyber capabilities so high that they just voluntarily withheld it from the public.
Which is
It
huge.
is. Now, ASL stands for AI safety level, but I mean, what does an offensive capability actually look like at that threshold?
Well, it means we're far beyond, an AI simply guessing passwords or writing big-lick phishing emails. When a model hits those upper ASL thresholds, it demonstrates the ability to autonomously discover novel vulnerabilities. It can write the necessary code to exploit them, and this is the scary part, strategically pivot through a secure network without any human intervention at all.
Wow, so it's basically an autonomous hacker at that point.
Exactly. And the fact that Claude Mythos found a 27-year-old bug in OpenBSD is just the perfect illustration of this. I mean, OpenBSD isn't just any operating system.
No, it's like the gold standard, right?
It is historically regarded as the absolute gold standard for rigorous, paranoid code auditing. Human security researchers have literally combed over that exact code for decades. So for an AI to find a flaw there, it must possess a level of structural code analysis and logic comprehension that is entirely foreign to standard automated testing.
Okay, that explains why access to Mythos is so heavily restricted. The sources say they set up something called Project Glasswing to allow only vetted researchers to use it. And oh, they also donated $4 million to open source security organizations to help bolster defenses.
Yeah, that's a big myth.
But wait, help me understand the logic here for a second. I
Yeah.
mean, could this self-censorship just be a clever PR stunt? Because we've seen that our product is so powerful, it's a dangerous marketing angle before, you know. Is the dual-use threat detailed in that system card truly a paradigm shift?
What's fascinating here is the sheer historical precedent. A major AI lab benching a multi-million dollar frontier model purely on safety grounds after they fully developed it, that is entirely new territory.
Yeah, I guess no one's actually gone all the way to the finish line and then said no before.
Right. And if you dive into the dual use section of the Mythos system card, the specifics, they go way beyond marketing hype. They detail exact vectors where the model can be used to construct offensive cyber operations way faster than current human defense teams can actually patch them.
Oh, wow. So the defense just literally couldn't keep up.
Exactly. I mean, when your automated quality assurance tool suddenly proves capable of zero-day exploitation, a public release just becomes a global security liability.
That makes sense. Yet while Anthropic is, locking the vault, Jipu AI just blew the doors entirely off today.
They really did.
They dropped GLM 5.1 today. It is a colossal 754 billion parameter model, and they released it as open weight.
Yeah, open weight.
Which, for anyone not familiar, open weight means they aren't necessarily giving you the training data or the exact recipes used to build the model, but they are handing you the fully trained, compiled brain. You can just download all 754 billion parameters and run it yourself.
Which is wild.
And this isn't a toy. It is currently outpacing Claude Claude Opus 4 on benchmarks, it feels like one car manufacturer is refusing to sell a vehicle because it can go Mach 2 and might break the sound barrier in a school zone, while a competitor is just tossing the keys to a 754 billion horsepower tank onto the sidewalk for anyone to drive.
That is the crux of the tension today, honestly. And Vedropic's caution is commendable, right?
Yeah.
But attempting to control the proliferation of AI capabilities becomes almost impossible globally. When a competitor is releasing a 754 billion parameter Titan.
Yeah, how do you even regulate that?
You really can't. When a model of that scale is out there for local and self-hosted deployment, all those global safety standards kind of just shatter. Anyone with enough compute can now run state-of-the-art AI without any lab safety filters monitoring their prompts.
And the sources emphasize that Zipu built GLM 5.1 specifically for what they call long horizon agentic tasks.
Right. Yeah.
Meaning setting an AI loose to accomplish a really complex multi-step goal over like days or weeks. But if an AI agent is running autonomously for a week, querying databases, writing code, analyzing data, how does it not just, well, lose its mind?
That's the million-dollar question.
Because context windows, the active memory an AI uses to hold a conversation, they can only hold so much information before they overflow, and the AI just completely forgets what it was doing.
Yeah, that is the defining bottleneck of autonomous AI right now. If an agent generates massive amounts of token data during a week-long task, it inevitably suffers from a kind of rolling amnesia.
Right.
It simply cannot keep the entire history of its actions in its active memory.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. OpenClaw just released an update that directly solves this. They're using native support for Andrej Karpathy's LLM wiki pattern.
Such a brilliant approach.
It really is. Instead of relying on a fragile running chat log, this framework allows agents to maintain a persistent, interlinked markdown knowledge base. It's basically an external brain.
Yeah.
But the craziest part to me is this new dreams feature.
Yes. Is it dreaming?
The agent essentially goes to sleep overnight to reflect and organize its digital filing cabinets.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is a profound structural shift in how we architect AI systems.
Mm-hmm.
The dreams feature is it's an automated consolidation process.
Yep.
During the day, the agent takes actions and generates these messy, sprawling logs.
Mm.
But overnight, it reviews those logs, extracts the factual updates, and backfills that information into that interlinked markdown format you mentioned.
But I have a real concern here with an unsupervised AI running a reflection loop in the dark. If an agent is dreaming all night, aren't we just creating a recipe for compounding hallucinations?
I see what you mean.
Like, what stops the AI from waking up, reading its own generated logs, making a logical error, and then just convincing itself of a completely fabricated reality?
Right. Well, that exact risk is why the LLM wiki pattern relies specifically on Markdown.
Oh, because it's so structured.
Exactly. Markdown is a rigid, structured, flat text format.
Mm-hmm.
If the AI were just generating freeform summaries, the hallucination drift would be massive.
Right. It would just hallucinate a whole novel by day three.
Totally. But by forcing the AI's dream state to act more like a librarian, linking specific markdown files, updating structured bullet points, and categorizing factual outcomes, you introduce a strict grounding mechanism.
Oh, okay.
The AI is basically writing a highly organized wiki about its own experiences. So when it wakes up to continue its task, it queries that searchable factual database rather than relying on the fuzzy, degraded recall of a stuffed context window.
So if AI agents are now capable of waking up, querying their own permanent memory, and executing like month-long hacking or research tasks, human timelines for cybersecurity are completely dead.
Pretty much.
We aren't just facing human hackers who need to sleep anymore. We are facing tireless automated machines. That sudden urgency places our foundational infrastructure under intense pressure, which perfectly explains the next major development in our stack.
Oh, the Cloudflare news.
Yes. Cloudflare just published a concrete post-quantum security roadmap. They are targeting full quantum-resistant encryption across their entire platform by 2029.
3 years. I mean, in the realm of enterprise infrastructure, demanding a migration of that scale in 36 months is practically tomorrow.
So what does this all mean? Upgrading the entire internet's infrastructure to post-quantum encryption isn't just changing the locks on the doors. It's like migrating the entire internet's infrastructure to post-quantum encryption in 3 years sounds like trying to swap out the engines on a commercial jet while it's mid-flight.
That's a great way to put it.
Why is Cloudflare panicking to hit a 2029 deadline?
This raises an important question about the Store now, decrypt later threat model.
Score now, decrypt later.
Yeah. Cloudflare, along with the broader cryptographic community, operates on the assumption that current encryption standards like RSA and ECC are already living on borrowed time. State-sponsored actors, sophisticated criminal syndicates, they are currently harvesting and storing mountains of encrypted internet traffic.
Wait, so they're just hoarding data they can't even read yet?
Exactly. They can't read it today. But they're stockpiling it for the exact moment a stable quantum computer comes online. And that timeline is rapidly accelerating, mainly thanks to AI models optimizing quantum algorithms.
Wow.
When that day comes, all that harvested data is instantly decrypted. Cloudflare is setting this aggressive 2029 pace because the data you transmit today is only as secure as the encryption standard you'll be using tomorrow.
That makes the VeraCrypt update circulating today incredibly vital then. It shot straight to the top of Hacker News today with over 400 points. The sources are absolutely adamant. If you have encrypted volumes anywhere in your stack, you have to pay attention to this.
Yeah, because Cloudflare is protecting data in transit as it moves across the internet, right? But VeraCrypt protects data at rest.
The actual files sitting on a physical hard drive or a server somewhere.
Precisely. Local volume encryption faces the exact same quantum threat. If someone images your server's hard drive today, they just wait for Grover's algorithm running on a quantum machine to slash the effective strength of your encryption key.
Ah.
The new VeraCrypt project update tackles this by introducing quantum-resistant hashing algorithms for the key derivation phase.
Okay, so making the password itself harder to crack.
Essentially, yes.
Yes.
It significantly hardens the process that turns your password into the actual mathematical key, ensuring that even a quantum computer would have to spend thousands of years trying to brute force the local volume.
So we are overhauling the cryptography of the internet and local storage, but, and this is crazy, the underlying plumbing of the cloud is being ripped out and replaced too.
Yep, AWS.
AWS's CTO, Werner Vogels, just announced S3 files. He is giving Amazon S3, which is arguably the biggest storage bucket on the planet, stronger consistency guarantees, and PO6-style access.
This is a huge shift.
It is, because, wait, PO6 is the language a traditional file system uses, right? It expects folders, permissions, file locking, instant updates. But S3 was built as an object store. It's like a massive warehouse where you just throw a sealed box in and get a tracking number back. Giving S3 PO6 access feels like violating the laws of physics and cloud architecture. Why force a square peg into a round hole?
It directly ties back to the massive AI models and agentic workflows we were just discussing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Traditional software, like the very wiki engines those autonomous agents use to store their markdown files, it expects to interact with the normal file system.
Yeah.
They need to lock a file while writing to it, append new data sequentially, and quickly list directory contents.
Okay.
An object store like S3 handles those operations terribly because it was designed for limitless scale, not intricate step-by-step file manipulation.
So developers were stuck building crazy workarounds just to let their AI agent save a text file in the cloud.
Precisely. Developers had to run really complex, expensive middleware just to translate standard file system commands into S3 object requests.
That sounds like a nightmare.
It was. By completely re-engineering S3 under the hood to natively support PO6 semantics and strong consistency, meaning when you overwrite a file, the very next read request gets the new data instantly, not the old cached version, AWS is removing a massive layer of friction.
Wow.
They are letting the limitless scale of the cloud interact natively with the standard protocols that all modern AI and legacy software require.
It is incredible how these massive sweeping changes to AI and infrastructure eventually cascade down to the day-to-day reality of people actually writing the code.
Always does.
I mean, while tech titans are battling over quantum encryption timelines and 754 billion parameter behemoths, everyday developers are still in the trenches wrestling with legacy code bases, bloated apps, and stubborn office hardware.
Oh, for sure. The day-to-day reality of a developer is rarely about orchestrating a frontier AI model. It's usually about figuring out why a 5-year-old piece of code suddenly broke on a Tuesday.
Which perfectly explains this highly practical guide trending on Hacker News right now from Pachowski.io. The author argues that before you ever parachute into an unfamiliar code base, you should use 3 basic Git commands as an orientation layer. Git log, git blame, and git diff.
Oh, that's great advice.
The source claims doing this will save you an hour of pure confusion. Now, I use Git all the time, but usually just to save and push my work. How does analyzing these logs act as a map?
Because reading static code only tells you what the system does right now.
Right.
It is completely devoid of context.
Mm-hmm.
Using Git properly allows you to read the forensic history of why decisions were made. Git blame tells you exactly who wrote a specific line of code.
So you know who to yell at.
Huh, exactly. And Git log provides the narrative history of the project's commits. Then Git diff shows you the exact mechanical changes made between two points in time.
Okay, so you piece it all together.
Right. By combining them, you aren't just reading syntax, you are tracing human intent. You can see the exact Tuesday afternoon 3 years ago when a developer panic-fixed a bug, and you can read the commit message explaining why they used a bizarre workaround.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Treating code as a historical timeline builds a mental map that reading a flat text file never could.
It's basically the digital equivalent of checking the building's blueprints and the contractor's notes before you start knocking down load-bearing walls.
Exactly.
And speaking of knocking things down to build them better, the developer community is apparently pushing back hard against modern software bloat.
Oh, the Zillum project.
Yes. The crew behind Druid and Pete just released Zillum. This is an experimental, reactive, Rust-native UI framework for desktop apps. Crucially, it bypasses heavy frameworks like Tori or Electron entirely.
Which is so needed. Electron is a perfect example of how the industry prioritized developer convenience over user experience. Well, for the last decade, if a company wanted to build a cross-platform desktop app like, say, a simple to-do list or a chat client, they would use Electron. And Electron effectively bundles an entire Chromium web browser engine inside the app.
Oh my gosh, so you end up consuming half a gigabyte of RAM just to render a blinking text cursor. The bloat is infuriating.
It really is, and that's exactly the problem Zillum aims to solve. The push for native Rust GUIs represents a fundamental developer rebellion.
I like that phrase, developer rebellion.
Yeah, because Rust compiles directly to machine code. Zillum allows developers to build complex, reactive user interfaces that talk directly to the operating system's native rendering pipeline. No heavy browser engine sitting in the middle.
That's awesome.
It is about returning to lean, lightning-fast applications that actually respect a user's CPU and memory constraints.
I absolutely love that structural purity. But, okay, if Zillum is a rebellion against using web technologies for desktop apps, this final project from our stack fully embraces the absolute weirdness of the modern web platform.
Oh, this one's my favorite.
It's hilarious. It's a tool called Printervention. The goal is to revive dead USB printers that modern operating systems like Windows and macOS have completely dropped driver support for.
Yep.
How do they accomplish this? By running a full Linux virtual machine inside the web browser and bridging it to web USB over a protocol called USBIP. Now, I am delighted by this, but I have to ask, why on earth would someone spin up an entire virtualized Linux operating system inside a web browser just to print a piece of paper? Isn't that the absolute peak of developer over-engineering?
Oh, it sounds completely absurd on its face. But the mechanism behind it proves a profound point about the sheer power of the modern web platform. The browser is effectively acting as a hypervisor here.
Really?
Yeah, it runs a compiled Linux kernel in a WebAssembly environment, and then it uses the Web USB API to pass hardware commands directly from that virtualized Linux environment straight to your computer's physical USB port.
So the browser is physically talking to the 15-year-old plastic box sitting on your desk?
Yes. While billion-dollar companies are deprecating old hardware to save, like a fraction of a cent on driver maintenance, an independent developer just used cutting-edge web APIs to duct tape that obsolete hardware back into existence.
That is incredible.
It's the absolute peak of over-engineering, sure, but it is also a beautiful demonstration of human ingenuity.
It really is. And, you know, it perfectly encapsulates the entire landscape we've explored today. If you are listening to this right now, whether you are preparing your company's AWS infrastructure for quantum threats, or you are just trying to use Git blame to figure out who broke the staging environment, today really demands that you hold two thoughts at exactly the same time.
Right.
You have to respect the terrifying bug-finding scale of models like Claude Mythos and the autonomous dreaming capabilities of open weight giants. But simultaneously, you must never underestimate the cleverness of individual developers rewriting the rules of storage, memory, and hardware.
That dual reality is exactly where we live now. And as we watch these massive shifts unfold, I actually want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
We are entering an era where AI agents are literally dreaming overnight to automatically organize their knowledge and independently solve complex long horizon problems. Yet at the exact same time, humans are spending their weekends building incredibly complex virtualized browser environments just to bypass arbitrary software locks on obsolete hardware.
Yeah.
As these two forces collide, will the future of our infrastructure be defined more by hyper-advanced AI gracefully optimizing our deepest flaws, or by human ingenuity constantly stubbornly duct-taping the digital world together?
Wow, that is the perfect question to end on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the tools you use, keep exploring the boundaries of what is possible, and we will catch you next time.